This morning's study is the book of Micah, chapter 1, verse 1. Sister Esther, if you'd read one verse.
The word of the Lord that came to Micah, the Moabite, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem.
All right, this gives us the time frame when the prophet Micah performed his ministry. And it's interesting that it covered parts of the reign of three kings, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Therefore, when he speaks, you have that time frame in mind, and let's say it's roughly couple hundred, a year 800 or something, somewhere in there. Now, if you look in your Bible, though, it has B.C. 862. You've got, have you that?
It's a 750.
Mine's
a 740. 750, well, let's say, 750, that's right. So when I said 800, that roughly is, gives you some perspective as to the time element. Now, and these were kings of Judah. But you'll notice that his ministry was directed to
Samaria and Jerusalem.
All right, to both directed to both houses of Israel, where some of these minor prophets were spoke to Israel, the ten tribe kingdom their ministry was mostly involved with, or Judah. But here, this is both. Now, what was the question?
The fact that these three kings are listed shows he was a contemporary of Isaiah.
Yes, that's right. We had in a previous study mentioned the various ones and roughly where they spoke, and sometimes there were four or five of them that at one point or another during their ministry touched upon the ministry of three or four others. But Isaiah, of course, is a very major prophet. And it's better to link it with a major prophet, because usually, like you take Isaiah and you read the book of Isaiah, you have a lot of what certain kings did. So it's sort of a mixture of prophecy and history, a lot of it, where in these other things, it's not as a prolonged detail. All right, now, we're going to get into the subject matter proper. Yes?
Also, Micah is mentioned in Jeremiah 26:18. He speaks of him and speaks of his prophecy.
Yeah. All right. And then one in Isaiah, when that was mentioned, probably you were thinking of Isaiah, the fourth chapter.
Well, I was thinking of the first chapter, actually, which lists four kings, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz.
Yeah,
Hezekiah.
All right. But there's also another where he practically uses the words of Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come to that as we read this later. Yes?
I'm sure it must be in some of the other prophets, but just that, you know, the things which he saw, you know, mm-hmm. not just that he was told by the Lord that these things would happen, but that, you know, was kind of envisioned that Micah observed what was about to happen.
And usually it's not the favorable things, because the condition was not the best that existed. Let us read two more verses, please.
Hear, O ye people, hearken, O earth, and all that therein is, and let the Lord God be witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, the Lord cometh forth out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth.
Right. Any comment on that? Let's start with verse 2. Now, when he says, hear all ye people, hearken, O earth, what about that? Yes?
In the prophet's day, he would have just been talking to the 10 and the 2 tribes, but this obviously has a prophetic message down here at the end of the age.
In other words, he's painting a broader picture than just that which would particularly focus upon those 2 tribes and a condition that would be more or less contemporaneous with his own day. And now in verse 3 it says, behold, the Lord cometh out of his place. Which place? And will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. Any comment?
Frank,
yes.
The high places where the Ahabs or any other people give sacrifice to false gods.
Well, certainly his message later on goes into about these high places and so forth. But it also would convey the thought of that judgment would begin with the higher-ups, with those that have more responsibility. For instance, those that are associated with the temporal rulership of Israel, they have a responsibility. And those who are of the priesthood or in the ecclesiastical realm, they have a responsibility of God, a stewardship that there will be an accounting for. But of course, as has been mentioned, these high places of worship on the hills did exist, and a burden of some of this prophecy is focused on that. Yes?
On a natural level, I have a note that it's referring to Shalmaneser's destruction of the northern kingdom, Sennacherib's invasion, and Nebuchadnezzar's invasion. Is that true?
Well, this is subsequent. See, what is the 5 chapters here in this book? I've forgotten. 7? All right, 7. And later on, there are some allusions. But also to the end of end time. Let us read verses 4 through 6.
And the mountains shall be molten under him, and the valleys shall be cleft as wax before the fire, and as the waters that are poured down from a steep place. For the transgression of Jacob is all this, and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? Therefore I will make Samaria an heap of the field, and as plantings of a vineyard. And I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley, and I will discover the foundations thereof.
All right. So Jacob is then synonymous with, as it were, in some instances,
Samaria.
All right, the 10 tribe kingdom. Remember the woman of Samaria? When she spoke with Jesus, she mentions Jacob, Jacob's well, and that we worship in this mountain, and so forth. And it was associated then in the northern kingdom. And and he here excoriates the northern and the southern kingdom, because you'll notice it's Samaria and Jerusalem, the high places of Jerusalem. But so far what we're reading is just the northern kingdom that he's starting to go into detail. Therefore I will make Samaria as an heap of the field, and as plantings of a vineyard, and I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley, and will discover the foundations thereof. when it says, I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley.
Breaking down.
All right. It would be a breaking down. But usually these altars were on the high hills. And even up there in Shechem, or Nablus, or Samaria. Samaria is slightly different, but not too much. But they are all synonymous from a spiritual standpoint. And so the altar being on the top and rolling the stones down would mean the desecration and the elimination of a former form of worship. And their offerings and dedications, which ostensibly were supposed to be to the Lord, really were awry or askew from what they should have been. Yes?
Brother Frank, elsewhere, I think it's the term usually is used for grove.
Which term?
The phrase grove is used.
Yeah.
In connection with a lot of the false worship that they were, these groves were to be destroyed. Now that normally you'd think of trees, but these groves would be statuary as well, images made of stone. Would that be the application more or less here, that it's not just the like an altar per se, but also these?
Well, it would be, but they're usually in higher places.
Right.
And being the mountains in the vicinity in Israel are not of very high from what, when we compare McKinley and others, therefore the tree line wouldn't be eliminated. You know, you go above a certain height and the trees are gone. But this is not true in Israel. It's higher hills there. There would be still have plenty of trees. And one of the tours we went to, Carmel, Haifa, up on the hill as high as we could go, and there was plenty of trees there. But like you say, the statuary as well as the stones of altars would be are implicated here as being eliminated. Yes.
I probably should know this, but I just want to make sure. Samaria, was that the capital of the Ten Tribes?
At one period of time.
Okay, but is that why it's, that's why
yeah,
it's
yeah.
pictured here? Yeah. So the contrast between Samaria and Jerusalem.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's right. Yes?
Micah was under Ahaz also, and the cross-reference points of 2 Chronicles 28:4. sacrifice also, and a burnt incense in the high places, and on the hills, and under every green tree.
Yes. All three practices were usually about the same. They're in the hills, in the high places, and the grove was usually in trees. And usually they would zero in on a particularly prominent tree of a little bit different stature than just an ordinary tree. And this custom is followed in various other cultures. And, verse 4, the mountains shall be molten under him, the valley shall be cleft as wax before the fire, the waters that are poured down a steep place. Any comment on that?
It sounds like almost like an earthquake or something.
All right.
Shall be molten on the
yes, that's right.
Valleys be cleft as wax.
That's right. The a rupture of the earth, a cleavage, and associated with an earthquake, and you have molten lava, which is extruded during. But yes, you would.
I was just saying, it sounds. Somewhat, this sounds a lot like Amos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Also, could be symbolic, symbolic mountains and the symbolic earthquake. That breaks down the system.
In other words, it sounds very strong for just a localized application in the prophet's day, in that prophet's day. And, yes?
It sounds awful lot similar language to Psalm 97. About the hills melted like wax at the presence of the Lord, presence of the Lord of the whole earth.
In other words, it's strong and it sounds like end time, mm-hmm. end time prophecy. Fifth verse, for the transgression of Jacob is all this, and for the sins of the house of Israel. And what is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? In other words, this thing that was obnoxious in the Lord's sight, back there, as far as in a visible sense, were these high places in the vicinity of Jerusalem, which it mentions in detail when you read the historical account in the Old Testament. But also in Samaria, the capital, there you had.
Was that where the temple was erected to distract them from Jerusalem?
There was a form of worship in Samaria for a brief period of time, different than Dan and Bethel. You had the golden calves in Dan and Bethel, but in Samaria itself, for a short period of time, you had a centralized worship. And that would correspond here with the days of Ahaz and up to Hezekiah in that time frame, Samaria. And there are ruins there that are off the road that you normally, I would have liked to have gone over and investigate, but usually there are other things that have a priority so that you don't go off the stop the car and walk over. It's about a half a mile that there's one place there. There you can see the ruins very clearly, which at one time was a palatial residence there. Very unusual. Yes?
Does someone else have another translation of the end of verse 5? The way that's phrased in the King James is confusing to me.
I have NIV. The second part. Mm-hmm. What is Jacob's transgression? Is it not Samaria? What is Judah's high place? Is it not Jerusalem?
Same thing.
Yeah.
You have the same thing.
Yeah.
Because when I first read that, I was thinking almost of, in terms of, and what should be Judah's high place? Like, Jerusalem should be Judah's high place. That should be the place where they worship the Lord. But it sounds like
no, it's negative. This is negative. In both instances.
High places
are given a negative connotation here.
So I'm not sure if I understand that. I can see in the application with Samaria, but with Jerusalem, they had set up like these altars in Jerusalem.
Yes, on the surrounding hills, there were groves that existed. Within sight of Jerusalem, so you could in Jerusalem you could see it. You could see these places of worship. Same with Moloch too. There, the Moloch worship was a visible form in Jerusalem. So it's speaking not of Jerusalem as one particular spot, the Temple Mount. It's not talking just Jerusalem is more than just the Mount, and the same with Samaria. Is more than just the mount. So you had your icons or idol worship in both places, in conspicuous places, in the places where they would go for looking for administration or religious worship.
Perfect.
Yes.
I remember that King study. I think King Manasseh. He did a lot of killing in Jerusalem. There was blood was flowing in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, in Manasseh, that, of course, is another period of time. Yes? Yes.
Just in reading this, in terms of the like symbolic application, might there be a reference to like Catholicism and Protestantism and like the idols of the Vatican and as
it could be? Yes, it could be given that application. Yes, yes, very very much so. The Northern Kingdom worship and the Southern Kingdom worship. The Ten Tribe Kingdom being picture of Europe with the Holy Roman, supposedly Holy Roman Empire, centered around Rome. And Protestantism, the Two Tribe Kingdom, centered in some cases England and America, I would say. Not just England and Ireland. England and Ireland, from one standpoint, was the two-horned beast. But one horn has ceased, and in its place is America, as it were, as far as a rapport. We're very closely in affinity with England, whether the public knows it or not. Yes?
On this, what is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? Besides the fact of the heathen worship that was going on, could it also be referring to just the fact that Israel was in Samaria, and that wasn't where they were supposed to be in this whole concept of splitting the tribes and having their own northern kingdom, and the fact that they should have been centered in Jerusalem?
Well, just like Dan and Bethel was divisive, in the in diverting attention from the annual feasts that the Israelites were supposed to attend, these three feasts, the males in a certain age category were supposed to attend. And how would they, but they would attend at Samaria instead of in Jerusalem. Yes. Yes, that'd be a proper observation, as well as this other about the religious. And in the religious, it's somewhat the same thing, too. They divert attention from the true head of the church, Jesus, and the Word. Sixth verse, therefore I will make Samaria as an heap of the field and as plantings of a vineyard, and pour down the stones thereof into the valley, and I will discover the foundations thereof. What's this as the planting, as a heap of the field and as the plantings of a vineyard? What about the plantings of a vineyard?
Vineyards, were they not on... what do they call these?
Terraces.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Terraces.
Terraces, mm-hmm. That's the one, yeah.
Yes. But there would be pruning, because pruning is very important with regard to fruitage of the vine, and that those off scourings, or this bramble and this dead wood and stuff, is very kinky and... Brambly would be put aside into a place, gathered into a place, and actually the best way of disposal would be to burn it. But this is before it's burnt, that as the heap of refuse is involved, whether it has to do with corn or wheat or whatever it might be, you have the same thing. You have a byproduct that's worthless, that is of no value, generally speaking. And so you have this, that the Lord is going to clean the slate up there in Samaria. And it still, there's a background of earthquake involved here. You know, the rather... and underneath the explosion and upsetting of the prior situation. Incidentally, this week, you also had another interview that Chef Farsi who was formerly associated with Gorbachev in the Soviet Union, and he resigned his position with the Russian government before it fell, communism, and went to his native province in Georgia, and they elected him to be in authority there. He was the son of their, and they're having problems there in Georgia. But he writes about the coming social explosion, and that if Russia does not get the help it needs, and it's mostly financial and backing of corporations and all the investment in their country, he said that the conflagration would not be just confined to Russia itself, but it would spread elsewhere, and he made the very dark picture. But he speaks of it as a social explosion, which is interesting, which an earthquake is more than normally just the fascism and the socialism and the Nazism that has been expressed in the past have been given an application as being a proof of this earthquake thing. No, he mentions this as being making them pale in significance compared to what would happen to the world order if that happened. And that one overthrow would incinerate or start it in other places, so that it would then be a general conflagration, not just a localized. We could go talk on this political, but I got to be careful. Let's read 7 through 9, please.
And all the carved images of it shall be beaten to pieces.
What translation?
Well, King James, but got a few NIS words in it.
Schofield.
Oh, yeah. He does that.
And all the carved images of it shall be beaten to pieces, and all its hires shall be burned with the fire, and all its idols will I lay desolate. For she gathered it of the hire of an harlot, and they shall return to the hire of an harlot. Therefore I will lament and wail, and I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the jackals, and mourning like the ostriches. For her wound is incurable, for it is come unto Judah. He is come unto the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem.
Right. Now, when we go to verse 7, this would be along the line you suggested, like Catholicism, statuary, and so forth, from that standpoint. And harlot. That makes you think right away, Revelation 17.
Yeah.
And the wound incurable, yes. And that it's gone beyond the point of no return when it... This judgment that is to take place is irrepressible as far as that system is concerned. So it shows that all will be made desolate in literal Samaria, as it were, and symbolic Samaria. Catholicism. Verse 8. Therefore I will wail and howl, I will go stripped and naked, I will make a wailing like the dragons and mourning as the owls. What about that?
Dramatic. Micah actually acted this out to try and get the attention of the people.
All right. Because if Isaiah was commanded for 2 years to go about Israel with a bear behind, and that would, they'd say, well, what's this holy man doing? You know, it's inferential here that Micah evidently did something along the same order. Because the eye isn't the Lord, and it isn't Samaria. It's the prophet. Yes?
Ezekiel did something strange, too.
Yeah, well, with regard to his wife and regard to other things.
Yeah.
on one side so long, and then on the other side.
Yes, we've got all kinds of hints. First, Sister
Karen. When Sister Dawn read it, she had jackal for dragons and ostrich for owls. Is the owl the owls, or is it an ostrich?
Is the what? Is that last
she
one?
She changed those two words.
Yeah, I know that.
I was wondering if they should be the way they were in the King James.
Well, I like the way the owl, mm-hmm. I like, because the owl does mourn. But it's true that the turkey, the ostrich, do have a very peculiar sound if you're in the farm and they hear them. And now the dragon, I view as just mean all these unfavored, not only the jackal, but others, that hyena, lizards, it depends on the context, forms of lizards that exist, especially in a warmer climate. Yes?
Where it uses two words, stripped and naked, he wouldn't have been completely naked. More like the other prophet?
Yeah, more like the other, stripped, even naked, in the sense, it's in other words, his clothing was sparse, and it's zeroing in that it's that is clothing. Otherwise, you could give it, if it only one word, you could give it a figurative sort of application. Yes. Now wait, Brother Brandon.
She can go.
Huh? You had your hand up before, then Sister Gail, and then Sister Chai.
I was just going to read a scripture reference in Job 30:28-29.
All right.
I went mourning without the sun. I stood up and cried in the congregation. I am a brother to dragons and a companion to owls. So it's familiar.
That phrase, dragon and owls. Yes. All right. And now, Sister Gail and Sister Chai, you.
Well, just a comment. The Lord must have strengthened Micah's voice, because we would go hoarse very quickly trying to imitate that sound any length of time.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, yeah. And when they're talking about Samaria, he said the heap of the field, the planting of the vineyard and so on, but for Judah, his mourning is more stronger. Indicating Judah's sin is worse than Samaria. The Jeremiah 3:10-8 indicates that. And yet, for all this, her treacherous sister Judah hath not turned into me, unto me with her whole heart, but plainly saith the Lord. And the Lord saith unto me, the backsliding Israel hath justified herself more than treacherous Judah.
All right. Well, in other words, it implies that the sin of Judah would be worse in the sense that they had more light and therefore more responsibility. Even if the sin was equal, the responsibility becomes the act of transgression would be the same. The guilt aspect would be of Judah would be more serious.
Yes. Question too, with regard to where you're saying, "I will make a wailing like the dragons or the jackal or whatever, and the mourning as the owls." And he's not trying to. This is just because they have such a horrible sound to them that he's not saying that he's going to go out and do animal imitations. It's just that's how his.
Well, you don't know. Maybe it does mean that.
Weep and groan.
Yeah, he would make sounds, and of which he'd say, well, what's this for? What's all this fuss about? And then that gives him an opportunity to sermonize. Yes, I would think it would be.
But weeping is normal. I mean, and groaning is not so unusual.
No.
I mean, it doesn't have to be animal-like to catch their eye if he's weeping all the time.
No, but if you mourn, you can somewhat, or groan, you can somewhat simulate the others that are done by animals or birds. Yes, I would think to a certain extent it's implying that. But it's playing it low-key, because if it went into this a little too much, then it would become Hollywood. You would read the Bible with pleasure. You see what I mean? You have to exercise your mind, and you see what it's saying, but it's worded in a way, low-key way, that it could be overlooked, and just being given a very that he would just wail or mourn and so forth in the relatively superficial fashion. Yes.
The fact that he's going with so little clothing would be more the attraction, you'd say, that would mark him out from most people. That alone would be quite an eye opener.
There'd be sight and sound.
Right. Just the fact that it mentions, though, that the jackals and the owls. Otherwise, it could just say he'll go out weeping and mourning, and then.
Yeah.
But because it mentions the two, it seems like it was.
So there would be somewhat a simulation.
Yes. Also, I think it gives the emphasis, because if you say weeping and mourning, well, some people can weep and mourn kind of quietly, but if they think about the sound that they hear of the jackals or the cry of the owl, it kind of gives that emphasis of the. The devastation and how serious this is.
Yes, that the weeping and mourning would be so intense that it would slightly call to mind or simulate the sound of these other creatures that are mentioned.
In the other place, when the place is totally decimated or desolated, in the places the jackals lives and owls lives and so on.
Yeah.
So it's a symbol of desolation.
Yes. Yes. And the ten-tribe kingdom has not yet gone into captivity, which it will. And, of course, when that occurred, they would think that this prophecy is based on that. But actually, that is just a practical value and of instruction, moral instruction, to the prophet's contemporaries. It would be helpful, but actually we see it's referring to the end time, where you would have this mourning, and it would be for all kinds, not only the loss of idols and things like that, but a lot of other things too, that of suffering and sorrow that would be attended in the time of trouble.
Brother,
yes.
Frank, you know, they refer to crocodile tears sometimes, that not. Do you think there's any connection with this?
No, well, crocodile tears are Hollywood tears. They're imitation. They're not deep. Not sincere. This here would be of an intense nature. Right. Now, we didn't read 9, did we?
No.
We did? For her wound is incurable, for it has come unto Judah. He has come unto the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. Comment on that.
Brother Frank, that pronoun he, should it really be it? The wound, it has come unto the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem?
Yeah, well, the only thing is, Samaria is sometimes likened to a woman. Remember in Ezekiel 16, you have Samaria as a woman, and Judah as daughters, and one having more guilt than the other guilt. So the Samaria could be the disease, let's say, using just another, the disease of Samaria is contagious, is so contagious that now it is now spreading to Judah. And the prophet is seeing that it's just a matter of time when the same thing will be done for Judah, and which is more, he's more closely associated with Judah, even though he's a prophet to Samaria, as it mentioned in the beginning. The fact it mentions Judah kings, because this Ahaz, Hezekiah, so they're kings of Judah, not kings of Israel. So he's speaking, as it were, with a Judah background, and bemoaning what's happening up in Samaria and the reason for this judgment, but he sees it as eventually affecting Judah. So the wound being incurable of the Samaria, he sees it's going to be that incurable disease. He says the word wound is going to spread to Judah. Just a matter of time. So I don't mind the pronoun her.
No, he. I asked about the pronoun he. Oh. The second part of the verse.
Oh, I see. Yes, that would pardon me.
Said it's referring to yes. The wound.
Yes.
The incurable
disease. Yes. Yes, I would say that. Pardon me, I took the wrong pronoun.
What, he has come to Jerusalem?
Yeah.
Meaning that
he has come unto the gate of my people,
even to Jerusalem. And he sometimes, even in the New Testament,
and in Norman's translation,
this is it reaches.
Yeah, it. To.
Also seeing how deep that it really is, that's why they need this destruction or purging, because of the incurable nature of it. And it's cut right to his where he stands.
Yes.
Since Isaiah was a contemporary, in his very first chapter, he gives a very graphic description of this type of sickness. Because from the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Isaiah 1:6.
Yeah. And that was the sin of Israel. The very first chapter, from the head to the foot. Yes.
Phraseology here about the incurable wound. That sounds so familiar. Is there something else that I can't find it in the concordance? But is there another scripture that has that same kind of phraseology?
Just with regard to spiritual Samaria.
That's what
what Brother Russell there was just saying. That she was given an opportunity to repent and she didn't repent. Therefore, we would have healed Babylon, but she would not.
Oh, see, maybe that's what
that's,
I'm
that's what I'm thinking.
Oh,
you're,
okay.
You're subconsciously.
Jeremiah.
Well, it's in Jeremiah too.
Is that Jeremiah?
Yeah,
okay.
It's in both.
That idea of not being able to heal is
You had the right idea. It's just. Let us read 10 through 12. I think that's you, sister.
Oh, I'm next. Oh, I'm sorry. Declare ye it not at Gath, weep ye not at all. In the house of Ephrah, roll thyself in the dust. Pass ye away, thou inhabitant of Saphir, having thy shame naked, the inhabitant of Zanan, came not forth in the morning of Beth-Ezel. He shall receive of you his standing, for the inhabitant of Maroth waiteth carefully for good, but evil came down from the Lord unto the gate of Jerusalem.
All right. This is a little complicated picture. It says, declare ye it not at Gath, weep ye not at all in the house of Ephrah. Roll thyself in the dust. What's that in the NIV?
Tell it not in Gath.
What?
Tell it not in Gath. Weep not at all in Beth Ophrah. Roll in the dust.
All right. Yeah, Bethel, in the house. The word house means Bethel. And if that's probably the more correct, because it's identifying cities. Gath, Bethel, Ophrah, Saphir, Zaanan. You notice their cities having inhabitants, so they're all the name of a particular. All right, now where's Gath?
The Gath
strip. It's one of the things, yes, in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, or the Philistine area, the land of the Philistines. Yes.
Second Samuel 1:19.
All right.
The beauty of Israel is slain upon the high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath. Publish it not in the streets of Ascalon. Let the daughters of the Philistines rejoice. Let the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph.
All right. Where are you reading that?
That's Second Samuel.
What chapter?
1:20.
The first chapter. Second Samuel, first chapter. All right, that's in David's day, which is important. And that's what this is probably talking about. That these places existed.
For the French,
yes.
Rolling in the dust, is that in connection with the mourning? Sackcloth and ashes. With the sackcloth, they were putting this dust on them, so rolling in the dust would give that.
Yes, it's related to a form of, but as to what the actual thing. They're all related. This. Roll thyself in the dust, having thy shame naked, mourning of Beth Ezel. But these towns I'm not familiar with. Yes, go on.
Also, it seems kind of strange that it says, weep not at all, and yet this is a whole section that's talking about mourning and wailing. And I was wondering if the weeping means not weeping in the sense of being sorrowful that these cities are being destroyed, or that the system is going down.
Mm-hmm.
The mourning should be a mourning for sin, whether it was for the nation or personally, but not to weep for what was being torn down by the Lord.
Yes, that's what it seems to be saying. In a way, though, I cannot identify these specific places as to what the true intent is, but generally speaking, what you're saying, I think, is being borne out by the context. But with regard to the others, these were of the Lord, originally. Even the 10-tribe kingdom and the 2-tribe kingdom are different than these Philistine areas. I think these places are in the Philistine area, the names of these various places. And which it could be researched out. Zaanan, too, I think that sounds familiar. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, too, that it also seems like a parallel, like a remnant picture almost, where the judgment's been given, this is what's going to happen, it's going to be destroyed, but that if through that you may be able to be spared or what have you, the actual judgment or condemnation that will come upon the rest of the rest of the nation. If you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, I know, I understand what you're trying to say, but, well, I think that would be a proper attitude to take, but I don't know if it's saying that here. That the advice you're suggesting is proper, but here it's a negative connotation throughout. The only difference is one, those that are not of the Lord's institution, these other places, that mourning for that is of a different nature than the mourning of that which was formerly blessed of the Lord and now is it's fading and is going to have a judgment upon it. So that's about as far as I can go into that. And this other, Lachish, that's also another part, the southern part of Judah. We might as well read the context, the rest of it, whose turn it is, and finish that, because it's more or less all these are names of various localities.
O thou inhabitant of Lachish, bind the chariot to the swift beast. She is the beginning of the sin of the daughter of Zion, for the transgression of Israel were found in thee. Therefore shalt thou give presents to Moresheth, Gath, the houses of Achzib, shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. Yet will I bring an heir unto thee, O inhabitant of Mereshah. He shall come unto Adullam, the glory of Israel. Make thee bald, and pull thee for thy delicate children. Enlarge thy baldness as the eagle, for they are gone into captivity from thee.
It's tracing the sin of the northern tribe kingdom back to these various cities that were worshippers of the sun. Generally, I'm just generalizing. And that disease had its start in these other places, reached to the northern tribe and affected that kingdom. And that kingdom, in turn, is about to infect and invade the fabric of Judah. And that it's like an incurable disease. It's like cancer used to be thought of as being incurable, but now, lately, science has helped in certain types of cancer. But that word, let us say 20 or 30 years ago, was just like a death omen. You had cancer, it was considered, that's it, it's just a matter of time before you're gone, but that's not the case now. Now it's AIDS, yes. If you have the active virus. Yes.
Interesting that one of the cities mentioned in verse 14 where it says Moresheth.
Yes.
That was the city that was the one that was Micah was from.
Yes.
Micah was a Moresh.
Yes.
Moreshite.
Yeah. Yes. This is like a suburb of Gath, near Gath, and that it would be considered in Judah from one standpoint. It's interesting when you study the history of the portion of land that was allotted to Judah. You had Philistines right in the Judah territory, not just along the strip. And usually the Philistines were in the valley, generally speaking, that they were the Judah itself, its cities were on the hills. And so you had Judah and Simeon populated maybe 1,000 villages on the hills of Judah. But in the valleys, the Philistines made inroads right into Judah. But along the Gaza, what we call the Gaza Strip, they more or less were so dense there, and it's a plain. See, Gaza is a lowland. It isn't the hilly part. So that these places mentioned, I would say, were related to Philistine invasion. They are Philistine-oriented, generally speaking.
Very
Jonathan?
Yes.
Wouldn't the confirmation of that statement be Lakish? Because now you've got Gath and Lakish that you can easily identify.
Yes. And what's this about? Make thee bald, and poll thee for thy delicate children, enlarge thy baldness as the eagle, for they gone into captivity from thee.
And Ivy says, shave your heads in mourning for the children in whom you delight. Make yourselves as bold as the vulture, for they will go from you into exile.
They will go from you into exile. Yes. Yes, that makes more sense, the NIV, and that some summarization.
That's what I was thinking, like sort of the remnant type picture.
Well, that comes a little later, I mean, that aspect, but this is just like a negative outlook, this whole thing. And there's nothing that I can see positive here. There's nothing positive in this. So you have to look later, in the later chapter. And the remnant can be positive, see, but that isn't in here per se.
Well,
yes?
There's a distinction here between when it talks of Samaria, that's the 10 tribe kingdom for reference, but it doesn't mean the Samarian people. The people of Sumer, I mean, they were different people, right?
Yeah, well, Samaria is it's talking about, like, Jerusalem, Samaria is talking about a city, the capital.
Okay.
So Samaria was the capital of the 10-tribe kingdom.
When we think of this, that's how I was confused in the beginning, was you think of the Samaritans as the Samaritan people. It's like, why are they talking about the Samaritan people? What did they have to do?
Well, they weren't even there. There were no Samaritan people at this time.
Oh, okay. So they came later.
They came later.
Later, yeah, right. Okay.
That came after the 10-tribe kingdom was laid waste. And they were put in, just like Russia had a policy of transporting people from various provinces to Siberia, or just interchanging, just to break their concentration, lest he lose his grip at the head of the communist power. He would take people from one place and put them in another province, and that province he would take the people out and put it in the province that he just emptied, as well as transporting some to Siberia. Usually we think of only the Siberia, but that was his policy, of mixing the thing, of disorganizing them. And he knew it would take time for them to get acclimated and adjusted to this alien territory, and by the time they get their senses and all, well, he'd be dead in the grave, so he had no worry. He was very clever, but in a bad way. I mean, yes?
I just said, did you say something about binding the chariot to the swift beast?
No.
Okay. Is that just basically telling them to get out of there? Or?
Yeah. That was in a much earlier verse someplace,
yeah,
wasn't it? 13, yeah. It's showing that it's a form of irony. It's strange that here the Lord is counseling the 10-tribe kingdom and the 2-tribe kingdom, and then comes this alien worship, and instead of it being of slow contamination, it's swift. The invasion is incredibly swift. The indoctrination of the heathen religions infiltrated into the 10-tribe kingdoms very swiftly, where you would think that with their culture and training that it would be take a long standing to affect them. In Ezekiel, too, you have that later. The sin of Israel is traced back to Syria in that case. I think we should conclude at this part because I cannot furnish much information on all these towns, just where they are on the map and their particular histories. I am at a loss for that detail.